To the sweet spot. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. We're talking PGA DFS for the Open Championship. With me, as always, Alex Remezowski. How's it going, Alex?
It's going pretty good. I'm happy to have you back.
Yeah, I guess I should say with you instead of you with me.
No, you're still the host when you're here. I'm with you.
But yeah, so yeah, got a lot to talk about here with the British Open, if you will. I know there's a point of contention that people like to correct and say it's the Open Championship. Shut the hell up. It's the British Open.
Yeah, it will forever be the British Open in my mind.
Right. Like it takes place in Britain, and it's the Open, and it's the British Open. And don't correct people on Twitter because you look like a douche.
Yeah, I think the United States should change theirs to the Open and then see what happens.
Right. Make the Open great again. But yeah, so we'll jump into that in a second here. It was kind of a nuts John Deere Classic coming out of last week. Had Michael Kim winning it. We were talking before we jumped on there. I don't think I saw anyone with a lineup that had Michael Kim.
Yeah. And just like I said, there was absolutely no reason to have Michael Kim in one of your lineups. And if you did, you're pretty much, you must see the future or something, because I'm pretty sure he missed four or five cuts straight and then was just on fire last week out of nowhere.
Yeah. But then a lot of guys tied for second there. Notable ones that we were on. I was on Joel Diamond pretty heavy there. And, you were touting Bronson Burgoon very hard and definitely got the result. He was a nice price too.
Yeah, it was like a shame that he couldn't do a little more on Sunday, but at the same time, there was no catching Kim, so it didn't really matter. But I was actually so surprised. Like when I went back and looked at some of the ownership, like some of the guys I was kind of really into or that we had been on for a couple weeks in these super weak fields, like, pretty low owned overall. I think they're probably like it seemed to be the tout kind of week in daily fantasy. Like you just saw it flying all over golf Twitter, all these wins everywhere. So like you said, Dahman, Duncan, Molinari, like that's what I was saying. I was like, Molinari might actually be contrarian this week, which is kind of cool. Like getting him at 13% in that field, that was pretty cool. And then Burgoon was like coming through.
Yeah, such a crazy week. I only built two DraftKings lineups because I just wasn't really feeling this John Deere Classic. And my GPP lineup outscored my cash lineup 441 to 424. You don't know how many missed cuts I had in my GPP lineup?
Four.
Three.
Three. Yeah,
I had Dahman and Molinari, and I still scored 441, almost cashed.
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking right now. I have a lineup that scored a 315. So I had a lineup that scored a 315, and then I had a lineup that scored a 613. And that 613 was, I like, honestly, you can't ask for much more than a 613. I tweeted the whole lineup out. 11th place in the 450K club twirl on DraftKings. That's 100,000 to first. It's really, really sometimes super depressing how quickly payouts drop off.
Yep.
Like, awesome week for the John Deere Classic, but it's like, man, was I close.
Yeah. And before we move on, I want to stress this. I actually had a real nice week over on Fantasy Draft. And that makes two straight weeks. I've had great weeks over there. The contests aren't huge, but you can win smaller tournaments and pocket a couple hundred bucks. And their format is they drop your lowest golfer. And I love that. I absolutely love that because, you know, that's one of the big complaints with golf is, you know, I get a missed cut and I'm dead for the rest of the tournament. Well, over here, you get one missed cut. It doesn't matter.
Bryson DeChambeau withdraws.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
That sunk some people. So yeah, that kind of set everything off on its head and just cascaded from there. But
yeah. Yeah. So that can be really cool with like draft.com, but, and like if you're a multi lineup setter in like a DraftKings or FanDuel, it can really, really hurt you or really, really help you. Say you set 10 lineups and you only had DeChambeau in five, then you got five that are way ahead of 20% of the field. So
yep.
I do like that with draft though. It is a very cool.
Yeah,
format.
That's fantasy draft. They drop your lowest one. Draft is where you go in snake draft format. And I actually had a decent week over there. Cause we've talked about in the past, they have their big tournament events where you move on each week and the further you get, the payouts get better. I was in a semifinal and came in third in the semifinal. So it was a nice like $60 payout from a $5 entry.
Not too shabby. So if you won that, you would be competing in a championship this week.
Yeah. So you'd be in a championship this week. I think the top payout's like $500. So
that's pretty cool. Not, I like that. Multi-week.
Yeah, it's not huge cash outs, but you're only competing against four other people and it's a five man draft. So, you're not having to go crazy and have these huge lineups. You just have to be consistent. And I kind of faded DeChambeau over there with the four or five drafts I did. So I had a decent week altogether on draft.
Nice. But that is definitely information people could use there.
Yeah. It's another good one for like this kind of week, because you're going to either have four good golfers and probably win some stuff, or you're going to fall apart. And I'd rather compete against four people than 400 or 4,000.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But so yeah, let's sink our teeth into the Open here. Tell us a little bit about the course, nicknamed Carnasty for how difficult it plays.
Carnasty. It sounds like it should be like a rapper or maybe like a song, like do the Carnasty.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's got that name for a reason. This is the 2018 Open Championship. Carnoustie Golf Links, Carnasty in Scotland. It's over 7,400 yard par 71, also nicknamed the Beast, which is, so I mean, between Carnasty and the Beast, I think that you could probably just stop right there and be like, it's in Scotland, and those are its two nicknames. It's going to be a difficult course. It's a Lynx course, it's a British Open course for sure. It's 74 yards. At 7,400 yards, I think this is something really important. You see the number 7,400, and a lot of people jump right to long ball hitters. This course, as you'll see with a lot of other British Open courses in the past, doesn't necessarily set up for just a long ball hitter. I was reading a lot around today. A lot of people were saying how fast the fairways are. So
yeah, I saw Brant Snedeker put up a Twitter post. He hit one 427, and he's not, you know, a particularly long hitter.
Yeah, exactly. So that is, I think, something that could, knowing that is going to like give you a little bit of edge there, because people who are just immediately ruling out any shorter driving distance type player might really be missing out on some value across the board.
Yep.
And another fun fact about the Open is that old people win this all the time. Eight of the Open's past 11 champions have been 35 or older. I believe the last two have not been. It's Spieth and Stenson.
Ernie Elsweek.
Stenson has got to be right there, right?
Yeah, he's not a spring chicken.
Yeah. But anyway, so yes, Ernie Elsweek, he won it in 2012. He's won here twice. Tiger Woods, he's old. He's won it three times, last being 2006. But anyways, to finish up with this course, if we avoid the rain, it's going to be real fast. It's going to be real firm. You might see some stuff like we are watching in the U.S. Open, only people probably won't complain about it because they're expecting it.
Right.
And it's not in the United States and it's not the USGA. The ball is going to roll forever off the tee. You see these guys hitting stingers and getting 75 yards of roll. That's possible. You can also smash drivers and get just as much roll. So players are going to be able to club down off the tee, which makes things pretty interesting. There's obviously trouble out there. There's always fescue on the links courses. There are deep bunkers, very accurately placed bunkers where they're going to come into play. We have 13 par fours, so that's kind of big. And it is a 7,400 yard par 71. So you're talking long par fours a lot of the course. You got three par threes ranging from less than 175 to over 225. And then par fives are both less than 600. So if we're seeing some good distance there, par four, par five scoring are both going to be important. Something I really like to look at on links courses is scrambling, because you just never know what's going to happen here. Avoiding bogeys, because scores, it's going to be more about avoiding bogeys than gaining birdies and eagles, as it almost always is in this tournament. And I mean, it's car nasty, so avoid bogeys, you're going to be looking pretty good.
Yeah, and one of the things that has been impressed upon me from research this week is the bunker situations are, you know, they're everywhere and they're severe. It's not you're not going to be hitting out of a fairway bunker and going for the green. You're going to cost yourself a stroke easily, maybe two.
Yeah, and some of them are so deep. Like, I think I saw Kevin Na hitting out of one and just, like, pretty much slapping at it and, like, jumping back with sand in his face and having no clue where the ball went. So you'll be seeing some of that for sure.
Yeah, some good Scottish golf. Let's jump in at the top here. Everybody's in the field practically this week. So we got some stars at the top. DJ, Rory, Spieth, Rosie, JT, all above 10K on DraftKings. Who's your personal favorite out of this group?
This is going to be one of the toughest groups, as it always is in majors. It's one of the toughest groups to nail down. And first and foremost, I think we can start off with Jordan Spieth is clearly not in form, and I think that's accepted throughout, which makes him very interesting to me.
Very,
because I cannot help but want to roster the people that I know people aren't going to be rostering.
Yep. And so, I mean, he's perfect for this course. If his form weren't like the worst of his career at the moment, his ownership would be astronomical.
Yeah. And I think like DraftKings did an interesting job of, like, they left him at 10-6. I guess you could base that off of the fact that he's the defending champion and has pretty much always played well in the British Open. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big thing. And people know that this is his type of course. This is his style of play. But he has looked terrible lately. And there's, like, really not much getting away from that. So, I mean, as a GPP play, he is very interesting to me. And then everyone can make a case for DJ. I think I'm probably going to be kind of looking elsewhere, which will probably hurt for a couple of days. And then as the field starts to change around and some other names come into play, kind of like I'm just thinking US Open right now, hopefully things work out in a different way. But DJ is having himself a year.
No missed cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, hammering everything that's in front of him. The one interesting with DJ is everybody's talking about, you know, that you don't need distance on this course, and that's one of his biggest tools. But he's a great player in the wind because of you know, how fast he can hit the ball. He can hit it low. He's good at it. So he's got, you know, the skill set to win here, which you know, if I was going to pick five guys out of this entire field, he's absolutely one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that can always be said. in terms of wind play. He's right there. It kind of, it's funny because that kind of strikes me like the complete opposite of that would be Rory.
Yeah.
But he has spectacular British Open stats also. Right.
I just can't do it on this course with Rory. Here's the scenario. Rory needs to win. There's got to be a little bit of rain, soften the course up a little bit, and then the winds have to die down for most of the tournament. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, it is interesting because I think there is some rain early on in the week that could happen. With that said, I don't see this course slowing down too much. I think they're probably going to leave it as nasty as they can.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like Jordan Spieth, only I'm less interested in him and he's more expensive.
Yeah. I would agree with Rory with JT and John Rahm as guys that like could win if the right conditions happened and they got to overpower the course and it didn't play as hard as it should. But like I said, it doesn't seem like that. It's only Monday, but unless there's like, they'd have to have it rain. Like Friday morning, it would have to rain, and then the course plays soft the rest of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, so Justin Rose at 10-2. I love him. I think maybe everyone is going to love him. Yeah,
great cash option.
Yeah. Yeah, we could probably just leave it at that. It's kind of been the same way this whole year with Justin Rose. Mm-hmm. You can expect good things from him. It's not necessarily like he's going to win, but he's not
killing yourself is half the battle, I think, in this kind of tournament. And he's definitely a guy who is just even keel and steady. It's really interesting with, so they got Rose paired with Spieth and then Appy Barnrat. And it's like, for Spieth, like at first I was like, oh, that's nice. He's got Justin Rose with him. Like that could be a calming effect. You know, Rose is a very quintessential British calm demeanor. And then he's got Appy Barnrat with him. We've affectionately dubbed Kenny Powers Asia. He's got the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other.
Yeah, that will be a very, very interesting pairing to watch. You're very right about that. It's just three ends of the spectrum right there. And I think Jordan Spieth lands somewhere right in the middle of the two, honestly, and right in the middle of the world too. Look at that. They're spread. They must do this on purpose because you don't see any like DJ Rory Tiger group this week like you would if it were in America.
Yeah, they don't do the featured group.
Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, I guess every... Nice.
I enjoy that better.
Semi-featured, but I think that's a good point. I like that. That's fun. Justin Rose, great cash option. I think he's going to be in it. It's so hard to predict, but he can play out here just as well as any of these top guys can. I think Dustin Johnson is top priced for a good reason. Justin Rose right there for a good reason. And then once you jump down below from Justin Thomas at 10 down to Henrik Stenson at 8,200, we're talking a lot of big names and a lot of players that you're going to be able to fit in your lineup because this pricing pretty much lets you do what you want to do.
Yep. Yeah. So in between there, we got a couple more big names in the nines. We've got Ricky, Tommy Fleetwood, Brooks Koepka, Sergio Garcia. You know, Sergio has not had good history here, so he's kind of out for me, not having a very good season overall.
That's definitely true. However, he has played a couple events in the past. It was actually in June, so he's had a couple weeks off, but BMW International Open and then the H&A Open in France. Finished 8th and 12th in those two events, so it does seem like he's potentially returning to form here, but I...
Yeah, but what was the field in those? Like a 12th in the BMW International Open? Like, I'd like to see a top 5 out of anyone that I'm going to put stock in that tournament, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I think the HNA, I think, had a decent field in terms of the Euro Tour, but you weren't seeing any Dustin Johnson. You weren't seeing any Justin Rose. You weren't seeing really any of these other guys that you might consider over him or that would be potential pivots. But he still seems to have put it like a little back together from where we saw him from the Masters through now. Mm-hmm. And so that's interesting. I think you'll probably get really good ownership on him if you do decide to play him. And his open history is very good from 2014 to 2016, T2, T6, T5.
You know, because he's a good links golfer, like, and his name recognition, I feel like the ownership's going to be higher than I would like to invest in with him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. He's definitely lower on my list, but I think there's a case to be made, especially if his ownership isn't there. Like you do have. I mean, you got Tiger Woods, Jason Day, Paul Casey, Molinari, Matsuyama, all like right below him. Mm-hmm. And you got Koepka, Fleetwood, Fowler right above him. He could get lost in the mix there.
Yeah. So another popular guy is going to be Tommy Fleetwood. Is he, you know, obviously he's an Englishman. That's kind of the theme with a lot of people at the Open here. But, you know, is he playing well this season, or did he just have one really good round at the U.S. Open on Sunday, and that's sticking in everyone's mind? Because he got cut his last time out at the HNA, tied for 59th at the BMW International. You know, wasn't setting the world on fire in the season prior. You know, he in the middle, solid, but not you know, he's definitely not in the company of some of these other names.
No, I totally agree. I think he had a hot start to the season with a few real good finishes.
Yeah, on the
and then tour. You know, yeah, and then the Hero World Challenge, like at the very beginning, but that's like 24 people or something like that,
right?
And that was a third place finish, and then he got a win, and he was right there in the Masters, he was right there in the Players, and then he was right there in the U.S. Open. So he seems like he's a big tournament player, just like someone we're going to talk about probably in 1 second, mm-hmm. which is very interesting. Like U.S. Open second, Players Championship seventh, Masters 17th. He performs in these tournaments, but with that said, he is a very likable guy. Everybody saw what he did on Sunday at the U.S. Open. And he's just like, the hype is there with Tommy Fleetwood. And I could just see 9,400 with some of the names around him. It just doesn't seem like the smartest play ever. And statistically, it's not at all. He's really like, he gains strokes off the tee and he hits fairways. But outside of that,
right. Things
could get pretty interesting. And then you put in the links style play. I think that gives him probably a little bump in this field, but ownership's going to be big with him too, but I'd also be leaning towards fade. I put a future on him, so hey, if he wins, he wins. That'll be cool. But
yeah, I'll let other people chase that 63 from the U.S. Open. Go back to playing him another week.
And I would say probably 15%+ will be chasing that.
Yeah. So somebody that I feel like is getting really overlooked is Brooks Koepka. You alluded to him. Coming off the Open. U.S. Open win, you know, last season he won the U.S. Open, came to the British Open and went T6. So he's at a prime spot. His game fits it, even though, you know, he does kind of depend on distance. He's gotten it done on courses that wasn't necessarily, you know, the most important skill. At the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, you know, he wasn't hitting driver off a lot of tees. So he pulled that out with a spectacular job of just, you know, not shooting himself in the foot on Sunday, you know, just doing what he needed to do, saving pars and bogeys where he needed to on a tough day. I could see the same thing happening here for Brooks.
I 100% agree. I am like, we talk about sticking with players in and out of these large events or all events, whatever it may be. Brooks Koepka, since the Players, has looked great.
Yeah, very good.
Like, he hasn't like let up. Like, the Players 11th, Fort Worth 2nd, St. Jude's was, he finished 30th, but it was like a small Sunday slip up. After that, he wins the U.S. Open, and then nobody plays him in the Travelers Championship, let alone the field, and he shoots 68, 69, 69, 65. He gains strokes off the tee. He can hit irons off the tee, like you said. His short game was amazing in the U.S. Open. Like, yep. If he was missing greens, he was getting up and down on those ridiculously fast and crazy greens with the bunkers, with everything we're going to see here. Like, I love that. And it does seem like he's going to be overlooked here. And I am fully, fully into that. I think the guy is back, and I think people were relating him with an injury for some time, and now he's a major championship that hasn't been talked about since that day he won, almost. And 9,200, like, that says something alone. Like, why is he priced at 9,200?
Yeah, it's very similar to what happened with Patrick Reed coming off the Masters when going into the U.S. Open. You know, nobody was playing him. He was a cheap price, like, made zero sense when you looked at it in a vacuum, and we told you to do it. So here we are telling you to play Brooks Koepka this week.
And I'm also telling you to play Patrick Reed.
Yeah, you know, I mean, let's just throw Reed in while we're on him. It's, I obviously have loved playing him this year. The one thing I have a little hesitation with, he played in the Scottish Open last weekend, and I heard he wasn't quite the same form that he's had so far this year. You know, he got cut at the Travelers, but, you know, that maybe that was just an adjustment period. And now he's, you know, that was part of playing in the Scottish Open, was getting over, getting his game in shape, getting on the right, you know, schedule time wise. And maybe he's ready for this weekend now.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can count it as a plus that he was there playing in that and made the cut.
Yeah. I mean, he's still T23, like, wasn't a horrible finish.
Yeah. And it was 65, 69, 69, 67. Like, people got blown out of the water on Sunday by a 60, I believe. So, there was definitely some scoring, and he shot 67 on Sunday and a 65 on Thursday. I just, like, he's a big event guy, just like we were just talking about. And yep, you go back and it's like, where he has played well, it's like, well, yeah, the crazy run of second at the Valspar, 7th at the API, and then nobody thought he was going to win the Masters, which still blows my mind. Yep. Wins it, and then he hasn't disappeared like all that much. 41st at the Players, which is not that great.
Wasn't his course, though.
4th at the U.S. Open with a great weekend. Yep. So,
and where else would Captain America want to win more than the British Open?
Exactly. Get him ready for that Ryder Cup right there. Right over in, you know, that hemisphere. T20 in 2015, T12 2016. He can play over there. He's got the win stats too, which I like. I pulled some stats in terms of pretty much courses 7,200 yards plus, and then moderate and heavy wind. So these were kind of some things I filtered out into my mixed condition model, which I've been loving lately, by the way. Shout out Fantasy National.
If you guys aren't getting the lineup logic content and Alex's model, you know, you missed out on guys like Bronson Burgoon and Harold Varner last week. Yeah, they were right there in the top 10.
Yes, they were. Bronson Burgoon was right up there. I honestly, like,
with all those names, I couldn't believe how high you had him. I was like, what, Bronson Burgoon? You sure, Alex?
I know. And I was like, with this field, I was like, I'm listening to this model, because I spent so much time with these crazy, the mixed conditions. Like, I love it. It's so interesting to go back and like, refine things. So, yeah, I mean, Patrick Reed, par 4 scoring, DraftKings points, tee to green, and like everything is right there. The only like question mark would be off the tee, which in those events that he that he finishes well in, it's his off the tee game that I think sets him apart. And then like we saw in the Masters, like when he gets into that zone where it's like par, like he doesn't mess up. It's like par at worst. And that would be huge here. If he can do what he was doing on the Masters, which is a difficult course, especially on Sunday at the Masters in the final group, to take all those nerves in and be able to like mishit every once and every now and then, miss a putt every now and then, but still be able to save par after par after par. I think that's huge in the 8,400. Like the guy's got the stomach for a major. He's got the head for a major. And I think he has a game too. So I like him. I like Brooks Koepka. I think those are two people who I hope go a little sleepy in this group.
I think they will. So let's finish the nines though with our guy, Ricky Fowler. You know, it's anytime we're in a major, there's obviously extra attention on him. He's been up and down this year. He had a good week at the Scottish Open T6, which, you know, could have some extra people on him. Pat Mayo on his show had brought up an interesting point about Ricky was the Vegas line on him is usually poor because there's so much action on him. They just can't afford to have Ricky win and have to pay out at the volume that he gets betting at, you know, like where he should be 30-1, you know, he's 20-1 because if he hits and, you know, they don't want to take a bath and people are going to bet him anyway. So they're giving you worse odds and you're still betting. So I know DraftKings and FanDuel pricing doesn't like take that as the only consideration, but that is part of it. So Ricky's price is sometimes maybe, you know, that factors in.
Yeah. I mean, if you put Ricky Fowler next to Jason Day, next to Patrick Reed.
Yep.
Next to Henrik Stenson.
Yeah, like that's his tier.
It makes sense. Yeah, that should be his tier here for sure. I totally agree, at least with how he's been playing. He has the finish at the Scottish Open. He plays in that every year, and he seems to do okay in it every year, which I think makes people more interested in him in the Open every year. Like a T30, a T46, and a T22 won't necessarily cut it for me at $9,700. Yeah. So I'd be looking probably down below him. However, I'm a Ricky guy. I love Ricky. And like, I think if you're a multi-lineup guy, I'm probably going to be trying to match ownership. I'll probably go light on him. Like, it's tough. I love playing him. So he's going to be there for me, but he's not going to be in my core group of guys by any means.
Right.
So he'll probably win.
Yeah. So let's kick off the eights with another favorite, Tiger Woods. You know, it hasn't been Tiger's year, and he's obviously bounced back, but he's been a tenacious competitor, but that's about all you can say about his play. The one thing where he has done well on less than driver courses, and you know, it kind of shapes up to be that way here at Carnoustie. So there's a little bit of an angle in with that, if you ask me.
Yes. Yeah. I was reading a little something about him earlier that he's played it three times. He says it's amazing how the course just stays the same. He's a three-time British Open champion. He seems like he is confident. He's got the stinger we all love.
Yep.
He's going to be able to, if he can keep it in the fairway and he knows the course, if he's able to put it in the right spots. And then for Tiger, it's just about, at this point, getting over that hump. Like, we've seen him struggle on Thursday, come back, come up just short. Like, so many times this season that it's like, I do believe that he's still got it in him. He gave me a fist bump and I told him to win a major this year. So like I said, cool, he'll be there.
Yeah. I mean, what I worry about with Tiger is he's just kind of been all over the place at times this year, especially early in the tournament. at the Open, he was dead in the water before he had even, you know, got a couple holes under his belt. It was just the worst possible scenario.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And like, I think I was off him there, but you're right. He's been like one tournament off the tee is his problem. Yeah. The next it's his short game. Then it's his putting. Then it's off the tee again. Like,
right.
But it does show at the same time that everything's there. Everything is there in a way.
He's got it through with all those problems where, you know, a lot of guys can't do that. So, you know, he's had some time off. Maybe it comes together.
I hope it does. And at 8,900, he'll be there for me, probably along like a Ricky Fowler type line here that his ownership is going to scare me because he's Tiger Woods and he's affordable here. So it's interesting, but a lot
of people have gotten their Tiger fix that, you know, they've had plenty of opportunities for it. And the casual golfer might, or, you know, the DFS player might see Tiger Woods and click on him, but you know, in a tournament with thousands of entries, it's you're not going to worry about that. And with everyone this week, ownership's not really, with a few exceptions, there's not really much cause for concern with ownership. It's going to be pretty spread out.
Yeah, like I mentioned to you, the max seems like it's spread up top at like 15% for like five or six guys right now. It'll be interesting to see, but I don't think it's going to be there's no one massive favorite this week for sure.
All right. Then next guy on the list is Jason Day. He's having a spectacular season right up until the Open, the U.S. Open. And, you know, he was in that grouping that it was Spieth, Day and Ricky and I'm sorry, Rory McIlroy. And they just, all three of them had a garbage Thursday and really not much of a better Friday.
Yeah, it's so hard to really call what he's going to do, but I love the price. 8,800.
Yeah, great price. And you know, he can play in the wind. He can get it done on a links course for sure.
Yeah, I honestly do think like a big part of winning daily fantasy tournaments is finding that guy that you truly believe is underpriced. Yeah. And like not even like it's like when Bryson DeChambeau, like right before his win, is priced at 7,600 and you're like, well, he's been playing real well. Why is he priced at this? There's probably a reason you're thinking that, and it's because he deserves to be priced higher. And you look at this, and you look at Jason Day with all the experience he has and his success in this tournament on links courses and just the golfer that he is, priced down here at 8,800 when you see some of these other names like Rory McIlroy, who's been playing like crap for most of the season, Jordan Spieth, same to be said for him. That makes Jason Day very interesting to me.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. You know, finding guys you think are underpriced and going to do well, I mean, not just for the value aspect, but you know, in a week like this, it's tough to get six guys in your lineup that you feel confident about. So, you know, you do need to save everywhere you can.
Yeah, and like just by playing him, that's like it's fitting a top range guy in at mid range, which allows you to get your favorite from the top and then fill in with the other guys you like that you would play on a week to week basis. And it's kind of like him and Patrick Reed are two of those main guys for me this week.
Yep. All right. Then you got Paul Casey, 8,700, you know, Englishman.
Cash. Justin Rose, yep. Paul Casey, cash.
Yeah, that's a definite cash pairing there. I'm not going to chase Casey on a GPP just because he's English. He does have the skill set for this course, but
man. Yeah, he's right in that price range where like a GPP lineup would be, it's like you fit him in your cash lineup with the guys you also think are safe with a Justin Rose, Paul Casey, and then jump down to some of these other guys that we'll probably talk about. And but with GPP, it's going to limit some of your other stuff at 8,700. So he's playing well. He does good at these tournaments. I like it. He had some sort of injury sometime in the season, so I don't know. That's interesting. He's
played a few times recently. Seems to be over it.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah. All right, then at 8,600, Francesco Molinari just setting the golf world on fire. Yeah, outside of the U.S. Open, though, yeah, here's his recent form. We'll go back to – we'll start with the Players Championship where he was cut in May. Then he went BMW Championship on the Euro Tour. He won it. Italian Open, second. U.S. Open, T25. Quicken Loans National, won it. John Deere Classic, T2. Like, that's a crazy string.
And how again was he 11 or 12% owned last week?
Yeah, I mean, on a course that was going to be a birdie fest, that you knew he was just going to eat it apart.
It blew my mind. We saw him birdieing par fours all day, all week the previous week or 2 weeks before that. It's like, it's crazy. I like him.
So the only thing that worries me here with him is, you know, most of these courses besides Shinnecock didn't exactly have teeth. So, you know, the T25 at Shinnecock with rounds mostly low 70s, that's a very good, solid performance. So, you know, I think he's a good bet here. I feel like a lot of people are going to queue him up at 8,600.
Yeah, people looking at like just a game, DraftKings game log there. Yeah,
like, how definitely do I not put this guy in?
Yeah. And there's definitely something to think about there. If you look at some of his stats, like off the tee, he's great. Par four scoring, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Ball striking, very good. And I like all of that. So if he can keep rolling some putts in, which he was definitely doing his past couple outings, that would be awesome. But this is, like you said, a totally, totally different type of course than what we were looking at the Quicken Loans National and at the John Deere Classic. But he did finish well in the Italian Open, the BMW PGA Championship. Like, those were both over in Europe. So he's a good play, I think. Yeah. Definitely someone to put in the mix there.
If you're looking to build a solid cash lineup, going Paul Casey, Molinari, that's not the worst bet. Starting off with those two guys, and then, yeah, that's going to keep your average salary right around 8,000 remaining. So, you know, you're not going to have to put any scrubs in.
Yeah, I agree with that. How do you feel about Hideki?
Oh, man. You know, he's one of my favorite guys to go after from an ownership perspective. He's, with the year he's having, people are just, they constantly ignore him. He was a good play at the U.S. Open for that same reason. He got cut at the Scottish Open this weekend, and that scares me a little bit. I mean, it wasn't awful. It put on a 68 and a 70, but you know, it was a like we said, a scoreable course, and I don't know. I'm gonna build some lineups with him just because if he wins, and you know, you've got him in a lineup at that price with super low ownership, it's going to do so much to leverage your lineup up the leaderboard, but it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. If he pulls off like a top 10, you're going to be very, very happy.
He's a good win player. He's a good links player. Like, I was really into him until he did what he did this weekend at Scottish.
Yeah. But like you said, like a 68-70.
Right.
That's not bad. Like, it might have been not gaining birdies and more just avoiding bogeys, which is, like I said, kind of what we're going to be looking for.
Yeah, that is kind of his game. You know, that's like, he's not a guy who goes super low. He's more of a guy that is going to just be on the grind. And
on the grind like Patrick Reed.
Yep. So, he interests me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely there's some risk every time you play him these days, but 8,500.
And then you got two more of my guys coming in at the bottom of this tier, Alex Noren and Henrik Stenson. Very into Noren. I think he is getting a little bit of buzz, but we've talked about this in the past. He's so vanilla. Like, he's from Sweden. Like, he's just such a boring golfer. But he just won the HNA. He's turned it around from his kind of mid-season struggle coming out of the Masters. And his game, I think, fits this really well, this course. He's more of a safe golfer. So,
yeah, I think Noren is getting some buzz. But with that said, like I always say, my gut instinct seems to be a good gauge of where ownership is going to be. And I saw Noren and I was like, I think I'm good. And I think about that for a minute. And I think that's because of the Masters. In my core, my DFS core, Noren was the one guy in the Masters that didn't make the cut. And I was salty about that. And I don't think I've played him since. And honestly, for all these casual players, which is, who knows, 40% of like the crowd we'll be seeing this week in daily fantasy sports, they might feel the same way. And also, it's Alexander Noren. Like, no one talks about the guy.
Right.
He's coming off a win, though, which is interesting. But
yeah, like, I almost wish he would have been, like, second. that would have given you the same good feel and not quite the same buzz. But, you know.
Yeah, he did just get a payday, though. Yeah. So.
And then you got Henrik. Great price. I'd be really excited to play Henrik if there weren't some talk about him having an elbow issue. What do you make of that?
I've been ready to bring this up since it was a couple weeks ago. I caught it on Twitter. It was Henrik Stenson withdrew from the Scottish Open he withdrew from?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find his tweet right now. I think he tweeted it out, right? Sad to have to withdraw from the Scottish Open due to elbow problems. Good luck to everyone and have a great week. Hoping to be fit for Carnoustie.
Right. Like, I mean, maybe in a GPP, but, you know, he would have been a cash mainstay for me if that hadn't happened. It's just too risky.
It's crazy. Gained almost 55 strokes on the field in the British Open over the past 5 years.
Such a good T11. Such a good win. Price.
40, 239, second. It is. It's a great play and a great price. Honestly, I hope like more people catch wind of this injury.
Start tweeting it out, retweeting it every couple hours.
Everybody go tweet about Henrik Stenson's injury and then...
Yeah. I think his ownership is going to be really low because of it. So if you're into it, play him. I mean, I'll build a lineup or two with him just to see. But
yeah, it's funny. His Vegas odds, I don't think, reflect any sort of injury at all. So it's just interesting. I'd like to see the movement of that. If anyone has time, go look into that. If you see his odds, I don't know, moving up and down, like, Vegas knows all. So.
Yeah, I mean, you can't forget he missed the beginning of this season with an arm injury. So,
yes, he did. It was an elbow, right?
I forget what exactly it was, but it seems like that similar issue.
Yeah, he was flying around on ropes in a commercial.
Yeah, but yeah, he's a Lynx player. He can get it done.
He is. This is his type of tournament, so keep an eye out.
So last two names here, you got Phil Mickelson, Mark Leishman. Yeah. Leishman, he's another guy. Australians can typically play a links course. They're used to playing in the wind. And Leishman, you know, he likes to play in the big spots. So I got a little interest in him at 8,000.
Yeah, Leishman, I remember every time we've kind of looked at links style courses this year, we've kept an eye on him. He hasn't done anything to blow our minds this year, but he's a very good player for the price tag. I am not hugely into him, but he does have very good open history, and I would 100% take him over Phil this week. Phil has just kind of flown off of my radar over the past month or so, and I'd be way, way, way more interested in Leishman.
Yeah, I'm off of Phil as well. So let's hit the sevens. Kicking it off, you've got another really boring golfer, Brendan Grace, who is a great play this weekend. He's just so consistent. This is exactly his kind of tournament. I could easily see him being a top 20, but not really ever being close to the win.
Yeah, totally agree. It's like someone who I think about betting in advance, and I'm like, wait, it's Brennan Grace. He's not going to win. But you're right. He plays these courses. He has good British Open finishes. He's there, and he's going to be in the mix. And I don't have that much to say about him, but he's a good play at 7,900.
Yep, nice addition to your cash core. Here's a name we haven't talked about in a bit. Tyrrell Hatton. You know, I heard some talk that he might have had an injury a couple months back, and that's part of why he played so crappy coming through, like, the Masters and then the May stretch there. But turned it around. The U.S. Open, T6, HNA, T16, Scottish Open, T9. He's an Englishman. He would love to win this tournament.
Scottish Open starting out 65-64. Not the greatest weekend, not a great Saturday. Definitely stands out, everyone above him. You see, oh no, it's Saturday. Sorry, I got this all screwed up. Yeah, Saturday, not a great Saturday. Everyone else is kind of like in the mid to high 60s. He shot a 70, like literally everyone around him. So it was one bad day there. And then you had Brandon Stone on Sunday shooting a 60, which just literally destroyed everybody. So,
yep.
Tyrrell Hatton, like you said, he does seem like he's coming into form. And if there was actually an injury there, that makes a lot of sense. Like, definitely explains the up and down of this. Finished T5 2 years ago. Other than that, it's kind of some ugliness surrounded by four missed cuts, but he's definitely in play at 7,900.
Yep. And then, we don't have time to hit every name the rest of the way in the sevens.
I know. You almost want to, though, right?
I mean, you know, this is where you're going to make or break your lineups.
Yeah, it's the sevens and eights for sure.
Yeah, you know, one guy that does interest me, Ian Poulter. If this course plays tough like it should and the wind is up like it probably is forecasted to be, you know, I think he's going to be a really good value. You saw at the U.S. Open on Thursday, Friday, when it was real windy, he was one of the few guys who could still score on that golf course. You know, he went 69-72 on a day when most everybody else was in the mid-70s. You know, there was even guys in the 80s. So, you know, it's when the course got a little bit different through the weekend that he fell apart a little bit.
Yeah, and like, it was also like a couple really bad holes.
Yeah.
Even like, it was like out of 72 holes, it was like he had four bad ones. Like, it was his Thursday, or no, it was, I think it was Friday afternoon that he finished. He got like a triple and a double towards the end of his round in the US Open. It was like a shank out of like the fescue.
Yeah.
It was like, he was right there, and then he kind of fell back and then pushed his way through the weekend, but obviously he had fallen too far behind. But I totally agree. Like, Poulter proved himself even in like one day and 90% of another day enough to me that you can see that he can play on just like the hardest of hard courses and kind of like muscle his way through. Yeah. And it was in America. But it was resembling something that you would expect him to be playing in England.
Yep.
He's right there. He's like, I could really, really see him doing okay here. He finished T3 in the US Open, or the British Open in 2013. He missed a couple cuts, and then he did decent last year, T14. He didn't play in 2016 because he disappeared for a little bit. But I like him a lot here, 7,800. I don't think his ownership's going to be anything to worry about. I agree. Again, I have to name All right, we'll do something fun here because there's five. Oh God, it's everyone. Like, honestly, okay, Matt Kuchar, he's an older guy. He does good here every single year, but he's not in form. He doesn't do good here every single year, but he's always in the mix. He's not in form. Right. I think I'm going to fade him because if anyone down here is going to get more ownership than the next guy, it would be him. So I'm going to, for the sake of Monday evening, I'm a fade on Matt Kuchar at 7,700. Russell Knox, I think people will be into because he's coming off of a win a couple weeks ago. I'm a fade on him too. And that leads me to the next five people who I am actually interested in. And I'm going to make you choose two of these next five, which is Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Patrick Cantlay, Luke List, Tony Finau, Webb Simpson.
That's a tough one. I don't think I would have said Tony Finau before the U.S. Open because I didn't think he had any business playing well on that course, but he did.
He did.
Maybe he's found a different gear to his game. You know, he's not just the guy who's a big hitter anymore.
And he's also starting to look like a big tournament player after what he did at the Masters after destroying his ankle.
So, you know, I at this price range, like, he doesn't belong down here. He belongs higher up. Mm-hmm. So I think you got to include him. And then not interested in Luke List. Cantlay, I don't feel like you can trust him, even though, you know, he's done some stuff.
Everyone always wants to play Cantlay.
Yeah, he's kind of searched after. I'd go Cabrera-Bello. He's another guy that's a safe golfer, but you know, he hasn't been great lately.
Yeah, I agree with you though. If I were to choose two, it would be Rafa and Tony Finau. Mm-hmm. They're the two with British Open experience. Cantlay and List. Cantlay, I'm sure, has been here. He's got a weird career. I'm just looking at the last 5 years right in front of me right now. And then Luke List played in the Scottish Open and did very well. But I don't know. That could be a long 2 weeks for him.
You know the two guys I would rather pick that you didn't give me? Matthew Fitzpatrick and Zach Johnson.
Fitzpatrick also had a good week last week.
And he's kind of like... I mean, he doesn't have a reputation for it yet, but I feel like very shortly he's going to have a reputation for being a guy that, you know, plays well in big tournaments. He did a little bit at the Masters, you know, for I believe it was his first Masters. He was pretty good. T12 at the U.S. Open. He's coming off T14th at the Scottish Open. So 7,600, like, I can get on board with that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially coming off of a few pretty decent finishes, especially including last week, which was really just the distance between him and the winner was 10 strokes on Sunday. He shot a 70. Brandon Stone shot a 60 on Sunday. So,
right.
I mean, he was right there, and he's from England, which is obviously a plus here. I like that, too. And I think he has some, like, real skill in terms of, like, iron play, mm-hmm. which we've seen kind of a little previous to this. It's like he went through a little rough stretch and people kind of forgot about him.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, ZJ's got a British Open in his history.
Yes, he does. And he seems to always do pretty damn well here.
So, yeah,
which is interesting because last week might make people a little pissed off about Zach Johnson. Like, it's not like he did that bad, but
yeah.
People like wanted him to win last week.
Right. I mean, he was, I guess it was opening round. Like, he was kind of in it, maybe just in the morning. And then I remember seeing him as performing well for a minute there, but I'm looking at his scores and they're not bad. It's 69, 70, 67, 64, but in a birdie fest.
I think he was like three over in his front nine on Thursday and then ended up shooting one or two under. And so people probably were pissed, like, oh my God.
Right, right away, they hit the panic button.
Right, like the normal Thursday freak out.
Was it Austin Cook? He put up a triple, and then he went six straight birdies. Like,
yes.
The craziest way to get to 3 under.
Yeah, I was like very, very all go on Austin Cook last week. Yeah. Kind of out of nowhere, but that I saw that triple, and then it was just so many birdies. I was like, yes.
Yep.
And then he stopped making putts and kind of faded. Yeah. But
and then yeah, you brought.
I like the ZJ play. Yeah. You've kind of sold me on him just now.
I'd rather play ZJ than Webb. Like Webb's gonna get the name recognition slightly more than ZJ, and he's got the win this year. Came in 10th at the U.S. Open, so I think people are gonna go after Webb, and he's going to look great through 2 days and then he'll have his disaster round. Like that's what's going to probably happen with Webb.
I completely agree with you. And for any bettors out there, first round leader, Zach Johnson loves to play well on Thursdays.
Ah, okay.
That was fun. Yeah.
All right. So let's,
which is good for making cuts too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's kind of boring, but, so let's hit some discount dives here. You mentioned before we jumped on, Grillo is probably the chalkiest guy of the week, Emiliano Grillo at 6,900, because that's a really cheap price. And he's done some great stuff this year. Really accurate kind of golfer. Not quite the scalding hot form that we had seen in late May, early June, but he burned some people at the U.S. Open. He got cut. I'm sorry, 6,800 on DraftKings.
Yeah, 6,800. I think he's going to be played a lot, and I think there's good reason for that. And a lot of these guys have like taken a week or two break, so it's like they're names you haven't seen in a little while, but you see what he's done, what we know he can do. 6,800 is pretty great. In the interest of saving time, I'll just name off four guys down here.
Yeah.
That I think are very good value options, in my opinion, right now. Charles Schwartzel is always in a tournament like this.
Huh.
I'll have to probably do a little more digging into him as time goes on. We mentioned Tony Finau at 7,200. I really like that. Daniel Berger is in here at 7,300. And I don't think anyone's going to talk about him. No. I'm not totally sure how I feel about him, but he stats out very well.
And he's such a reliable guy. Like, he's not going to blow the doors off this tournament, but he should be good for making the cut. He could do a little bit of something. And he's another guy in this vanilla vein that it's just, he doesn't stick out to you for any reason. He's not flashy, but solid golfer.
Yes, 100%. And then you got Ben Ahn at 7,100. Stats are like looking great here, which is interesting. Like, I don't love it, but like that's definitely a play. And then I'll just name them off quick. Kevin Na, Charlie Hoffman, Ryan Moore. That's 7,000, 7,000, and 6,700 Ryan Moore, who, if we can think a month back, was like 11,000 or something. Yeah, like that, I just keep seeing that with him. He keeps getting no love, and he keeps doing okay. Maybe not like well enough, but 6,700, please.
Yep. Then you got Ernie Els down there.
You got to mention Ernie Els, especially this week.
Obligatory old guy, Ernie Els. You know one guy you didn't mention that I hate the guy, but he shows up in big spots is Pat Perez. Like he's at the point where he's playing in the tournaments that he wants to play in, or doing well in the tournaments that he wants to be in.
Is he just permanently priced at 7,000?
I guess so, man. He came into the year in like the mid to high eights, and
I know, and he's been at Seriously, I would just looked at him like, oh, 7,000.
Yeah, I think
just like every other week.
I feel like maybe the DFS pricing community is making him get on a scale each week and going off of that.
Oh my god. Yeah, so I agree with that. Other names like at a quick glance being Monday evening again, like Charles Howell, I've loved all season, but he's got nothing to speak about at this tournament. Hmm. Austin Cook coming into form, extreme value, 6,600. He does, however, have some blow-up holes that could really hurt you at a tournament like this.
Yeah.
You got Ches Reavie down there. Don't love him here either.
Yeah.
But like, there's these names that I've just been like so like loving the past 2 or 3 weeks that you're seeing down here, and like, I'm guessing two of the four I'm going to mention are like going to make the cut. You never know. So like Austin Cook, Ches Reavie, who was the, oh, Bronson Burgoon. Dude's been killing it.
Yeah.
However, you're throwing him over into another country in like the snap right. of a finger. That can be very difficult, but like GPP wise, getting someone at 6,500, like, hey, oh, you got an Australian, Matt Jones, 6,500.
Good links,
plenty
player.
Of experience here too. Yes, I like that.
Yeah, so I mean, there's some names if you're gonna get crazy. I still, you know, my write up in my notes is always hit the mid tier values, and that feels like a good week to stick with that, especially in cash. But yeah, if you're gonna get a little wild, it's not the worst week to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely gonna be looking into this a lot more over the next 48 hours. So
yep, we will be in the Slack chat, so if you are a Lineup Logic patron, get in there. And if you're not part of the golf channel on that Slack, you gotta just get the right hashtag, so just hit one of us up in the general and we'll send it over to you. You can get to be part of that by going to patreon.com/lineuplogic. So let's wrap up, Alex. Let's get let's do some kind of one and done, pick a winner deals here. Give me an Englishman, an American, and an abroad otherwise player. Let's start off with an Englishman.
All right, I'm going to take the easy pick, the safe pick here. Englishman, Justin Rose.
Okay. I'll chance it and go Tyrrell Hatton. I think he's one of the guys that would love to win in front of his countrymen.
Yeah,
you know, he's like a fiery that. Kind of golfer that you don't normally see with British golfers.
And an Englishman pivot yeah. from Tyrrell Hatton would be Ian Poulter.
Yeah, another guy who's a little up there. All right, give me an American.
American, Brooks Koepka.
All right, since you took Brooks, I'll take Patrick Reed.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you did that because that was definitely the other one I had in mind.
Yeah, I mean, outside of those guys, you know, Spieth and DJ have a good shot, but you know.
Tiger Woods is going to amaze us all at 1.2. I promise you that. I just, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It's tough. Yep.
All right, so someone from abroad.
Abroad, I'm going out on a limb here, going off stats, going off some recent form, and I'm going to say Jon Rahm.
Oh, that's spicy. Caliente.
Yes, I mean, stat-wise, he's crushing it for
yeah,
me.
It's interesting. Fantasy National loved him. Which I wouldn't yeah. think he would stat that well for this course.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It really is. But in terms of tee to green, playing in the wind, off the tee, par fours, ball striking, even putting on faster greens, like he's up there across the board.
Yeah, and then for me, you know, if you could tell me Henrik Stenson's elbow was healthy and he was going to play 4 rounds of golf, it probably would be him. In the absence of that, I'm going to say Mark Leishman because I think it's going to be windy, and I think he's going to handle the wind and show up like he usually does in big spots.
Yeah, I like that. I always want to – honestly, for some reason, in my head, Mark Leishman is an American guy.
Probably because he's a little rotund.
And that might have something to do with it. That's a good point.
Yeah, the Australians love their sweets as well.
I like that. And I'm surprised you didn't say Alexander Noren.
I was staring at the two of them. I just don't think Noren's got the win equity. I think he'll play very well. I think he's got a good shot at top 20, top 10. But getting it done and nailing it down is a different animal at this level. So,
all right, I like it.
There you go. Put a bow on it. So, yeah, guys, get us on Twitter. I'm at @Roto_Juan. WAN. Alex is at Donald Remzowski.
Donald Remington. Twitter.
You've made it a hybrid of everything. Your Twitter.
Yes, I have
name on there. So,
speaking of my Twitter, it's going literally insane right now because I posted a video of Tiger Woods at the Tiger Jam, and I am full-fledged viral all day.
Nice. Good stuff.
Like, absolutely insane. I think Tiger's probably going to hate me, to be honest, but go check it out. It's in the USA Today.
Nice.
It has, like, my phone has not stopped all day.
Yeah, it's always interesting. You're like, I don't know how guys that you know, get crazy amounts of, of Twitter interactions.
I know, if you have like 100,000 Twitter followers, I don't know how you guys do it. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's fun, but I'm like, it's getting to a point where it's like, whoa. And I feel like Tiger Woods is gonna hate me, but go check out the video. It's a funny one.
Pretty good.
And yeah, it makes you want to
I enjoyed it. Too. You might get blackballed by Tiger from future Tiger Jams, but
I know, and I really wanted to go back to Tiger Jam too, but yeah. Maybe it's worth it.
Oh, well. But yeah, good stuff there. Some inside footage from our own Alex Remzowski. All right, guys, get at us. Show us your lineups. Let's cash a little bit here. And remember, it's going to be an early tee time on Thursday. So Wednesday night, get them done while you're not playing baseball during the All-Star break.
Yes, at us, like tag us in your messages, because Wednesday night, it's Wednesday night, and you got to do it before you go to bed because you're not going to do it in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to add the at to one or both of us, because as much as we try and check it, stuff falls through the cracks if it doesn't pop up a notification for me, at least on the phone.
Yes, agreed.
All right, guys, good luck and may the sports be with you.
All right, catch you next week. Good luck. We'll be right back.